Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. I know he can play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome to a phenomenal episode of the Steelers Final Score. I can already tell it's going to be great. The Pittsburgh Steelers are victorious. They went 33-20 over the AFC North rival Cincinnati Bengals, and I'm joined by my co-host Christopher Carter of the Behind the Steel.
Hey,
what's up, Chris? How's it going?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm great. I feel like, you know, there's the big brother and there's the little brother, and every now and then the little brother kind of gets some momentum and feels like they can take on the big brother and talk the big game, and then sometimes the big brother just has to smack you around a little bit, and I think that's what the Pittsburgh Steelers did to the Cincinnati Bengals today. Before we get ahead of ourselves, let me tell the listeners, if you want to call in, you can. It's 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. We always have some great callers. We hope to be getting a lot of people on the air. The phone lines are open. But I'll tell you what, after this game, it's really a good feeling when you can sit there and watch the Steelers play, I would say, semi-subpar football and still be able to escape with a 33-20 win. There was a lot left on the field. When Chris, you and I were messaging each other throughout the game, there were a lot of plays left out there. But it has to be a little comforting knowing that even on your worst day, you're still able to hang up 33 on a very, very good Cincinnati Bengals defense. I understand that six of those came off the defense, but still, what were your overall thoughts on the game?
You know, you're exactly right. It's when you play, when you do not play your best and you still get that kind of a performance. I mean, and we didn't just beat them. We beat them in their house and beat them down. I feel comfortable saying this. The Steelers beat two teams in stripes today, because there were several calls that I thought were questionable. The whole game was chippy, but you didn't see really a flag go against the Bengals, a significant flag go against the Bengals, until the late second half when the game was pretty much being put away. I really enjoyed seeing them. Vontaze Burfict didn't do much today. He was really put moves all over the field. He kept coming out because he kept getting hurt. And you know what? Ben Roethlisberger did not have his best game, and to give the defense credit for the nice defense that is, they kept people deep twice, and they did some interesting stuff that we'll cover in film room this week. And they put both their safeties in the middle of the field so that Ben could not read what they would be doing. But at the end of the day, despite that, the offense still did find a way to put up two touchdowns. They scored the field goals and they scored field goals, and the defense caused three crucial turnovers that ultimately put this game away. Highlighted, I'd say, Stephon Tuitt reading that little slip screen shovel pass to Bernard. That was so huge. And then William Gay, the pick six. Like that's all that Will Gay does when he gets his hands on the ball. It was so huge. And then shout out to Robert Golden getting his first NFL interception in the fourth quarter that ultimately ended the game. I love seeing. Seeing the Steelers fight ways to get tough wins, and you know what? You know, 33 points. I think that was the final, 33-20. You know, I don't care how you get them. You put up 30 points on a team that, you know, is supposed to have the best defense in the land and everything. That's significant, and I was very happy to see it.
Yeah, and a lot of people are going to look at total yards. They're going to see Cincinnati finish with 385 and Pittsburgh with 354, but The ultimate tale of the tape, if you ask me, is the time of possession. Pittsburgh had 35 minutes and 47 seconds in time of possession to Cincinnati's 24 minutes and 13 seconds. That's over a 10-minute advantage in terms of possessing the football. And if you ask me, if you can point to one thing that I enjoyed on the Steelers' offense, it was their balance. They had a great run to throw balance. They threw 39 times, rushed for 28. That's not perfect balance. I understand that. But when you have Ben Roethlisberger, you're not looking for perfect balance, but that's as close as you're going to get. And D'Angelo Williams, I thought he played a tremendous game with his limited touches. He had 76 rushing yards on 23 carries, two touchdowns. He was able to give them what they needed in the run game. Roethlisberger, 282. Outside of that one really poor decision, the interception to Reggie Nelson, I just thought that the time of the throw, meaning where the game was and the 13-point lead. And like I said to you, Chris, when we were messaging each other, it's kind of like a long punt anyways. It just was not necessary, and that's what's frustrating. But other than that, I thought the Steelers' offense, you know, they have red zone issues, but credit to the Cincinnati Bengals' defense as well. People always want to rip on Todd Haley. They want to rip on Ben Roethlisberger, you name it. Sometimes you have to tip your hat to the defense and say, you know what, they did a great job. Pittsburgh was able to get in the end zone twice in the red zone. Final red zone statistics, let me look those quickly. They were 2 for 3 in the red zone. So not terribly bad. Our phone lines are open as always. It's 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. We have our first caller here, Vito. He's calling from New Jersey as always, if we can get the computer working. There we go. Vito, you there?
Gentlemen, what a great win today. I mean, what an important win today, because it seems like none of the other teams are going to let down. Everybody's in the thick of things, and, you know, if you look at Kansas City, what a way for them to win. They escaped a game that was so close to being a tie near the end. Rivers battled all the way to the end. But I guess my question is, why is it that Roethlisberger sometimes doesn't get the credit he deserves? I mean, look, I didn't see the whole game because, you know, I have to watch it on NFL Red Zone, and I see a lot of parts and bits of the game. But the one thing I'll give him credit for is he keeps moving the team into Bengals territory. And I think that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, and to be able to do it so many times and come away with no touchdowns, can we blame that on him, or do we blame that on the receivers getting double teamed and maybe not getting open enough? And then I think the throw down the field that got intercepted that he was trying to throw to Martavis Bryant, I think it's more out of frustration because they had 4 or 5 drives where they came away with field goals. And I think, you know, he gets mad because he feels that they should be able to put TDs on the board at least every drive or the other drive. So I still give him a lot of credit for getting the team into Bengals territory. I mean, it seemed like almost every time they had the ball, they came away with at least a field goal. So I don't know. I don't know what it is about him. I don't know why some quarterbacks could get into scoring territory and always come away with a touchdown, where someone like him, it seems like when he gets to that, he has a tough time doing. I don't know if it's the coaching staff just not making the great calls. I don't know if it's just the guys get confused and they don't get open enough. That's, you know, that's something that I wonder sometimes, where we could be on a roll 2 games in a row, and then a third game, you know, the defense kind of bailed them out, because otherwise it was just field goal after field goal after field goal. Give me your take on that.
Well, you know, it's funny, Vito, that you mentioned that, because this Thursday, every Thursday, the Steelers, all their coordinators are available to the media. And this week I listened to the Todd Haley interview, and he was with, I want to say, Bob Labriola at Steelers.com. And they brought up the red zone issues, and Todd Haley blatantly said, we extend the red zone to whenever we get past the 50-yard line. And he said, our goal is to get points every time we cross the 50-yard line. He said, now, do we want to get touchdowns? Yes. So we look at it as once you cross into that other their opponent's territory, we're looking for at least 3 points. And the Steelers did that. And I was kind of keeping that in the back of my mind today, and I was thinking about, okay, they're over the 50. Todd Haley has said in his interview he wants points, and they got points. And they consistently got into that area where they were able to lean on Boswell, who had a big game and continues to be consistent as all get-out for the Steelers in their – turbulent situation in terms of kicking, the kicking game. But I understand that the red zone offense in terms of getting inside the 20 and converting to touchdowns is an issue. The Steelers sometimes seem to me like they outthink themselves. Instead of keeping D'Angelo Williams, you know, backed by Roethlisberger or playing, getting Ben under center, they go to a lot of shotgun formations. And when I rewatch the game, that's why I really want to look at the formations that they use in the red zone and how efficient they are when they call certain formations and their run pass options out of that. Chris, what do you think about the Red Zone?
I mean, there's times when you leave plays on the field, but there were also times where it was just like, man, Bengals did a good job right here. With the way that they play defense. And there were some times I was like, man, they did cover every option. But then there were other times where it just seemed like, hey, we had an opportunity here, an opportunity there. I thought the deep ball to Martavis Bryant that was in the end zone, he still needed to reel that in, but it should have been called for pass interference. The guy was there like a full second early and was hanging all over Bryant as he was trying to reel in the ball. That being said, if you want to be the best receiver on this team, like Brad said he does, he wants to surpass Brown someday, you got to make those type of catches, and that kind of a catch changes the game. But I'm not too perturbed. Throughout the game, I'm saying, like, we need touchdowns to put a team away. But fortunately, in this case, it didn't come back to bite us because the defense created enough turnovers for us and ultimately was able to limit the Bengals' offense. So I'm not too perturbed, but in the long run, I do hope that we can do better. But people have been saying that this Bengals defense is the best in the league. They've got the least amount of points or whatever. Maybe we don't have to see this defense too much more. And I do think that their defense is better than the Patriots' defense or better than, some of the other defenses that we'll have to face. But we're getting ready to face another tough defense next week in the Denver Broncos. Fortunately, it's in Pittsburgh. But we got to be prepared to deal with pressure, to deal with defensive backs that can hang with our wide receivers. It's going to be a challenge. But we will we'll see how it goes. I'm not too disturbed by the performance today, but we have to put points on the board next week.
Anything else, Vito?
Yeah, quick question. All right, so now we're at 8-5. If for some reason they were to lose next week and we're able to beat the Browns and we're able to beat the Ravens, which we should be able to do we still have a fighting chance of making the playoffs? Look, I think the great thing about today is that the offense scoring field goals, but the defense doing the things that Cincinnati's defense did to us last meeting was huge. Because remember, we got the last laugh. And let me ask you this. I don't even think the offense allowed Ben to get sacked, did he?
He
got sacked.
Yeah, he did. One sack.
I think the offense did a tremendous job. I mean, these guys are pretty stout defense, if you ask me.
Yeah, and to answer your question about the playoff situation, Vito, if they were to lose next week, and now with Buffalo losing, Buffalo lost to the Eagles today. If anyone else is not knowing what's going on in the league, we'll recap this a little bit in a second. But the Buffalo Bills lost, so that kind of pushes them further out of the hunt. And however, Pittsburgh, the Jets, and the Chiefs all won. Now, the Jets are the team that the Steelers have to really worry about. The Kansas City, if they slip up, that's great, but the Jets are the team that if the Steelers continue to win, they will they'll be in no matter what, regardless of what the Jets do. Now, if they were to lose next week, they still could be okay because the Jets have to play the Bills again and the Patriots again in their final three games. So I think what fans need to remember is that if Kansas City, Pittsburgh, and the Jets somehow all win the rest of their football games, Kansas City and Pittsburgh get into the playoffs, not Kansas City and New York, regardless of what the standings and seedings say now. And that's due to the fact that there's a three-way tie. They go to common opponents' record, and the Pittsburgh Steelers have a better common opponent record than the New York Jets. If the Steelers still do control their own fate, if they win the rest of their games, it doesn't matter what anyone else does. But if they lose next week, it definitely throws a wrench into those plans. And I got to be honest, the Denver Broncos with Brock Osweiler, a quarterback, don't really scare me. The Steelers have put up 30 or more points, I think, in their last five games, maybe. I think that the offense is playing extremely well, and they're playing well at home. So hopefully that gives you some clarity. On the website this week, I'm going to go through some scenarios now with 3 weeks left and what was, if this team wins here and that team wins there, what would happen with the Steelers. So hopefully we'll shine some light on that for you, Vito.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys. Let's keep going, and that's why we play the game, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the phone call, as always.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
You got it, gentlemen.
All right, now, phone lines are still open. You can call in if you're listening live. It's 347-850-8581. It's 347-850-8581. And, Chris, to me, this football game was really, from a defensive standpoint, kind of epitomized the entire season for this Pittsburgh Steelers defense. They gave up yardage, as I already talked about what the overall yardage was. However, they also got timely turnovers. None more timely than Stephon Tuitt's unbelievable read and reaction on the screen in the red zone, which actually injured Andy Dalton. But the other two interceptions were just, hey, they're going to make a bad play. We're going to capitalize on it. One of them was a touchdown with William Gay. Kudos to James Harrison. A tip of the cap to him, because if it weren't for his pressure on McCarron, I don't think that he actually throws that football, and that equates to the William Gay pick six. But still, three turnovers. Looking at the defensive statistics individually, the Pittsburgh Steelers were able to sack the quarterback three times, had several quarterback hits, though. Let's see, six total quarterback hits. I mean, they were all over the field, especially with McCarron at quarterback. You could definitely tell the ball wasn't getting out of his hands as quickly as it was with Dalton, and that's natural whenever a backup quarterback comes in. And I think that the Steelers' defense played well. I thought that Ryan Shazier played a tremendous game, and a lot of people aren't going to notice it because he wasn't as flashy as week two against the San Francisco 49ers. He didn't have three sacks and all of a sudden, you know, had caused two fumbles and all this stuff. It's not always going to be that pretty and that obvious. But if you watch Shazier tonight, he played a great game. And it would have been interesting to see if Eifert was able to stay in the game for the entire duration, but he didn't. And Shazier, I thought, did great in run support. In the passing game, came close to having his hands on some passes. Shazier played a great game. What was your takeaway from the defense as a whole in terms of maybe some players you would want to highlight or players that maybe didn't do so well?
Well, you know, I'm almost finished with my winners and losers here, but I'll tell you what. I really felt that Antoine Blake, the time that he gave up the pass to A.J. Green, and I understand he's A.J. Green, but you can't let him get behind you like the way he did on that deep touchdown pass. And he missed tackles all game. Maybe he is hurt because we did see him make up quite a few plays earlier in the season for Pittsburgh. But it just really makes me wonder, you know, how bad this injury is and, you know, how much we're really trying to keep him in there. Because today he seemed like a liability. The past few weeks he seemed like a huge liability. I'm not satisfied with the way he's playing. But as far as the defense, positively, Cam Hayward is always going to be Cam Hayward. It's like, you know, he's to me is like saying when Le'Veon Bell would have a big week or when Antonio Brown would have a big week. It's like he's a winner, but like he's always a winner because he's just that. But I was happy with the way that Cam played. You were right, Shazier. I thought he was doing some little things. He was really quick, and that's Shazier's specialty. He's really fast. He gets around, and he's starting to know where to be in the key situations, which I think really comes up. Shout out to Brandon Boykin. I thought he had a solid day in coverage, and he also made some solid tackles, which is what we've been looking for from a cornerback this season, and that might work him more into the lineup than even he has been the past two games. As far as James Harrison, that pressure was really important. I really thought that was big, and he also had some plays where he just like stuffed, the edge and forced the running backs inside. I was happy to see that, but William Gay, man, all he does is he seems to score touchdowns when he gets his hands on the ball. That interception was so huge, and like I said, shout out to Robert Golden, his first interception coming out there. And to be honest, whenever we've seen Robert Golden out there, it's not like we miss Will Allen that much. And I like Will Allen; he's a veteran, he's a wily dude. He had a sack today and five tackles, Robert Golden, he seems to not, when he's in the game, you don't notice a big drop-off in the safety position. And part of that's also because Will Allen's not a dynamic safety. He's a guy that knows our system and that can make plays. But I was happy with their performances. I thought Lawrence Timmons was doing a solid job. There were several times that I just thought they were like one step away from making a play, like you said with Shazier. There was a few times that I thought Timmons was a step away from having a big interception. Ultimately, I do think the defense had a really good game. I was worried early on, thinking like, man, if the defense is doing all this right now, if the offense doesn't score again, and then these guys find a way to come back, everyone's going to blame the defense, and like the defense shut down this offense that's been lighting people up across the league. And, you know, they got three turnovers and scored. You know, I'm not sure you could ask much more of the Steelers defense. Even with Andy Dalton getting injured, I'm not sure how much more you could ask of the defense with the situation that we know that they're in. This isn't a defense that's not elite. This isn't a defense that's elite. This isn't a defense that has superstar players everywhere. I think we have some superstars in the front seven, but the secondary, you just see the problems, and they're there, and they're going to be there. But the problem, but the thing for the team is fight through it, find ways to win, and that's what they did today. They found ways to win.
Absolutely, and it was certainly a situation where the defense, you've kind of been waiting for them to kind of turn the tide a little bit, and this is what they did during the Ben Roethlisberger's absence, those four games, and they would get those interceptions. You think back to Will Allen against St. Louis. You think about Ross Cockrell in the loss to Baltimore. I mean, all these games where the defense kind of stood up, and in a game where the Pittsburgh Steelers' offense was moving the ball but not scoring touchdowns, the defense stood up, and they put one in the end zone, which is huge, an absolutely huge play for the Steelers. And so the Pittsburgh Steelers now, and let's talk about a little bit of scoreboard watching. For those that do watch the scoreboard, like myself, I definitely was paying attention. The Kansas City Chiefs were able to scratch out a 10-3 win against the lowly San Diego Chargers, which is going to keep them in the fifth spot of the AFC playoff picture. The New York Jets went down to Tennessee and absolutely smoked the Titans, which now keeps them in the sixth spot. Pittsburgh winning, obviously, is going to keep them in the seventh position. But as I mentioned earlier in the show, we were talking to Vito, the Buffalo Bills lost 23-20 to the Philadelphia Eagles in Week 14, which means that now they fall further into the abyss that is the teams that are probably not going to make the playoffs. Probably going to be joined by the likes of the Miami Dolphins and the Oakland Raiders, depending on how the late game goes here against the Denver Broncos. You look ahead, and it's easy to look ahead and see, you know, who plays who, whatever. I think it's important for Steelers fans to remember, if the Steelers win out, it doesn't matter what anyone else does, they're in the playoffs. And now, you know, it's something that I didn't think about too much because I've been so focused on the Steelers' odds, the Steelers' schedule, the Steelers getting into the playoffs and making the postseason for about a second straight year, that I think it was Trent Green that said, you know, the Bengals want to win this division and they want to do their thing because they obviously don't want to play Pittsburgh, like in the wild card game. You get a bye, you're going to see if maybe Pittsburgh can get upset. The jockeying between the Broncos, the Patriots, and the Bengals very well might come down to the simple fact that I definitely think that the Steelers are a major, major threat in the AFC if they get into the postseason, to the point that I think that we, meaning the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think that the Steelers are going to be a team that you have Patriots, they don't want to play them, and the Broncos, depending on how next week goes, they might not want to play them again. What are your thoughts on that, Chris?
I think that right now the Steelers are super hot. They have – and teams, everyone's starting to look at it, and especially with last week. Even though it was the Colts, remember, those Colts struggled. Those Colts almost beat the Patriots not too long ago, earlier this season. They were a few plays away. If that wasn't for that stupid putt play that everyone talked about, they might have taken New England. And we demolished them. And it wasn't just it was an ultra demolishing in front of everyone. And people are starting to really take notice. You know, even with the loss to the Seahawks, people are like, oh, the Steelers' offense does look unstoppable. And today, despite going up against the Bengals, despite Ben throwing an interception in the fourth quarter and not throwing any touchdowns, there's still 33 points up on the board. And it's just like, what do people have to do to stop us? And this was an off day. Like you said, this was a subpar performance. I know people are definitely looking like, crap, we got to find some way to get this team out of here. And you would think that would have already happened with the amount of injuries that they suffered. Let's not forget that Le'Veon Bell is not even on the team, and he was supposed to be the biggest weapon coming into this year. And no Marquise Pouncey, no Beecham, but they just next man up, and it's going. They're going to town on these people. I mean, it's ridiculous. Some people, you know, they try to act maybe not worried. Like the Bengals were seemed pretty confident coming in, but I'll say this much: I found it very cool, and I didn't hear this until today, but there was an interview of Cam Hayward, and they said, you know, what do you think about, you know, the chance that the Bengals could clinch there? He said, not this week. He just said, you know, they may do it, but not this week. I mean, and then they asked Ryan Shazier the same question. He just said, not this week. And then they went to Ross Cockrell. He said, not this week. They came in today, and they were like, you're not going to come up in here and do this. And I think that Steelers have a killer attitude right now as far as if the play's in front of us, we know we got to make it. And not all of them are like that. You know, there's players on the team that aren't going to have the killer mentality. But it seems like as a whole, this team is like, we know what it takes to get it done, and we're going to take the shot. And even though, like, Ben's interception at the end of the game, he was trying to put the game away. It was not a smart decision. He threw it in double coverage. It shouldn't have been a pass that he thrown. But I think that was he was thinking his thought process. It ended up being wrong in this case. But he was ready. I'm going to put this game out of here because I know that Martavis Bryant can go get this. And I think the confidence just speaks a lot for how the Steelers are going to be moving forward. They're not afraid of anybody. You see that from some teams. They come in, like when Rex Ryan's teams, whenever they face the Patriots, there's a lot of noise about them facing the Patriots, and you know, all this, they're just coming in this week. We're just doing our job. We're coming here to whoop that butt, and we're coming in to take them out of the game, whoop that trick, get them out of here. And that's what happened today. They came into Cincinnati, they conquered Cincinnati, and it was the look of defeat that you saw from Cincinnati. And they were supposed to be, they were the number one seed in the AFC coming in this week. They were supposed to be unstoppable. And now they're 2-3 in their past five games. So I think everyone's on notice, and especially Cincinnati. They're like, we had a shot at putting these dudes away and hurting their playoff chances in our house. And, you know, their offense didn't play well, and we got smacked. We lost by 13, and that was with a garbage time touchdown. So I know the Bengals are scared. The Patriots, with all their injuries, they're looking at the Steelers like, man, we barely escaped last time. And the Broncos, they're like, man, we got to play these in their house. You know, the one thing that they have going for them is because of our record right now, we cannot get it is the ultimate outside shot that we get any home game in the playoffs. And they're like, well, that's at least one thing they can look at. But I'm pretty sure the whole league is on notice about who the Steelers are right now.
Absolutely. And then we have a caller here on the air. Well, let's even get Tim from Virginia.
Yes, I am. This is my actual first time calling in. I'm a lifelong Steelers fan. In the fall of 1971, I lost a coin toss with a friend at Halloween, and he had to go. So I had to go as Bradshaw, and he got to go as Hanratty. So that shows how far back I go. I'm really excited about this team. And I actually want to start with a brief song, because I'm a musician, that I wrote to the tune of, believe it or not, the Herman's Hermits, No Milk Today. And so it says, it's no clinch today, your title's going away, your quarterback's in a cast, Vontaze can kiss my... And I'll leave that as a... In case there are some tender listeners involved, I'll leave that as a fill in the blank. But I'm very, very excited about this team. Some of the things that are really striking to me are, one, the development of Villanueva. And I love Keith Butler's defense. I know a lot of people complain about some of the long pass plays, but that's just the league today. The thing that I'm seeing is, one, the return of the pass rush, and two, the punishing hits, and three, forcing turnovers. And when you look at how few points this defense is allowing, we're a top defense. You know, in spite of all everything Spice says against the secondary, and I'd like your opinion on what I just came up with there.
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, the offensive line deserves a lot of credit today, and Villanueva is certainly one of the guys that, if you're talking unsung heroes from the win, I would put him in that column. Some of the pulling plays that they had designed for him from the tackle position really opened up some big holes for D'Angelo Williams. But the pass protection was extremely solid. I mean, you had a Bengals team that you give up only two sacks to that Bengals team, that you're doing something right. And that's credit to Mike Munchak. That's credit to, the players along that line. You're missing Pouncey. You know, Cody Wallace is a far cry from Marquise Pouncey in a skill level standpoint, but he's getting the job done. And Mike Munchak he seems like a wizard with that offensive line. But, you know, the defense, today especially, they were bringing the pain, and they've done it all year. Mike Mitchell is kind of like the guy that's leading the charge, and he is trying to punish ball carriers. And if you're going to catch the football in the secondary and he's around you, you're going to pay for it. And that's something that I think goes all the way back to those 1970s Steelers teams that, you know, you might make a play, but you're going to pay dearly for it, and you're going to think twice before you go back over the middle of the football field. Chris, what do you think about the defense in general and kind of like the swagger that this team has now.
I mean, you see, here's the thing. Like you said, they give up the yards, but they hit you hard. They take the ball off of you. And like the swagger is exactly a great word to describe how they're carrying themselves. No, they're not elite. They don't shut you down in every play. They do give up some gashes, but this team comes to work. And I think that the way that the defense comes out, they're not afraid of you. Like they, no matter, even though the Bengals were starting to get up on them with some yards and they were moving on the field, and even after A.J. Green's touchdown happened, they did not abandon their scheme. They said, first, we came in here, we know we came to do it, we're sticking with it. And they stuck with the whole game, and ultimately, they really took the Bengals' offense away. They had two touchdowns, one was in garbage time, and the other one was a long play. And to be honest, their offense was kept alive on several ridiculous calls. There was times that was just like, what are you even looking at? The call on Antoine Blake when he had that personal foul call, I'm like, the guy just threw a punch in his face and you want to call him for something. There were several times that I was just like, that doesn't make any sense. And I honestly think the defense, they come out and they know that, hey, yeah, we have our weak spots, but we also know that we can make plays. And at the end of the day, it don't matter what you do, as long as we make the play, we can get it done. And I think that's what's important. You know, even if you don't have the most talented defenders, if you have a legit scheme and it seems like Butler knows what he's doing, it seems like this defense is forming, but you have a legit scheme, you have players disciplined enough to continue following your legit scheme, and then after all that, you come out there and you come out and lay the wood down, you beat people up, you take the ball off them, and you send them home. And that's what they did today. I think that the Steelers won the physical game, as they usually do. That's been our MO for forever. And on defense, I think that when you're not the best in the world, as long as you're the most physical on the field, it adds an element to the game. So, Tim, I agree with you. I'm happy with what I saw from the defense today. Ultimately, they have held the Bengals now to, what was it, 16 and 20 points this season, and they were averaging at one point at least over 30 points this season per game. So I'm happy with the way that they're playing these guys, and I'm glad that they stepped up in such a big game.
Thank you. And as a parting shot, I'd like to say, can we get people to shut their pie hole about Colbert? Every GM misses on picks, but you look at the roster, they're young, they're fast, they're growing. I don't get it. I live in Redskins land where, it's like, lose by owner, we got a great front office, we got a great coaching staff. If you lived in D.C. and had to go out to dinner on Thursday night with my buddies every week and see how glum they were about their prospects year after year, it's amazing.
Well, you know what, Tim, and you bring up a great point, and I've said this for years. The Pittsburgh Steelers fan base is the most spoiled fan base in all of sports, maybe second only to, the New York Yankees, and that's because when you succeed so much and you win the most Super Bowl titles in NFL history, and you consider an 8-8 season to be literally just down in the dumps. I mean, when they had those back-to-back 8-8 seasons, people wanted Tomlin fired, they wanted Colbert fired, and here you have other teams that if they got 8-8, they would be rejoicing. They would be giving out extensions. They would be throwing ticker tape parades and all this stuff. It's just an extremely spoiled group. And like you said, not every draft pick is going to pan out. I'm sure when they took Dree Archer in the third round of the 2014 draft, they thought that he could be the next Dexter McCluster. He could be a very shifty, return man that could really change the game. And it didn't happen. And so, sometimes you have to swallow your pride and say, but it didn't work out. But at the same time, when you draft Antonio Brown in the sixth round or Kelvin Beachman in the seventh round, or you pick up Ramon Foster as an undrafted rookie, and you see what these guys are doing, but you don't give enough credit for those picks either. And so it's like a catch-22, and I think Colbert is very comfortable in his job, and doesn't really care what fans have to think, nor would I if I was in his situation. But Steelers fans are spoiled, unbelievably spoiled. I live in Maryland. I know as you hear about Ravens and the Redskins and all that garbage every day. And honestly, Pittsburgh, they just go about their business. They just do their thing, and it works. Chris, what's your thoughts on Colbert and the GM and all that stuff that never
does? You know me, Jeff. The Steelers, this Steelers organization, we have had so many ridiculously successful picks. When people complain because we had one or two bad drafts, I'm like, imagine what it's like to be the Browns. They have picked quarterbacks for the past 20 years, and not one of them has worked out. They had they had Trent Richardson, and his first year he lit it up. Now he's not even playing anymore. When people talk about bad drafting and Kevin Colbert, this guy has built now two or three houses for the Steelers. The early 2000 Steelers, which almost won a Super Bowl, the mid to late 2000 Steelers, and now we've built this version of the Steelers. And each time we've had elite players in those conversations. And, you know, yeah, there's misses, but there's misses everywhere around the league. And, you know, when you go back and look at some drafts, go back and look at the first rounds of drafts and see how many people that you read that you don't even remember their name anymore. They're like, oh, wow, oh, I forgot all about him. Yeah, he's not even playing. He's like a backup for somebody. Darius Haywood Bey on our own roster right now was a top 10 pick not too, you know, when he came in the league. And now he's been an okay special teamer and a third round, like a backup guy for us. But he's not no first round pick, let alone a top 10 pick. And Kevin Colbert, you know, we have misses, but ultimately, we have some amazing hits. Right now on this team, we have our offense has at least four guys that can be considered undisputed all-pro guys in Ben, in Pouncey, in Bell, and Brown. And then that doesn't take into effect Marcus Gilbert, who's been having a great season. That doesn't take into effect David Castro, who's improving every year. That doesn't take into effect D'Angelo Williams. Well, actually, he was a free agent pickup, but still. That doesn't take into effect Martavis Bryant, who, though he makes his mistakes, he's one of the most elite threats. Not elite threats. He's one of the deep threats, best deep threats in the league. Doesn't take into effect Heath Miller, still on this team wrecking shop. 10 catches for 66 yards today. Shout out to Heath Miller. It also doesn't take into effect that we still have guys like Marcus Wheaton waiting on the bench who come in and can make a big play for you. You know, Marcus Wheaton could probably be a solid number two somewhere and putting up 800 yards and 6 touchdowns a season, but he has to sit behind Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant and the rest of our offense. So don't come to me with Kevin Colbert sucks. I'm with you on that, Tim. It drives me nuts when people forget how spoiled we are as a fan base and how lucky we have been to root for these Pittsburgh Steelers, who have the most Super Bowls in the first 50 years of this era of the NFL.
Yep. Every time I hear a stupid complaining comment, I just want to make them watch tape of the 69 and 70 Steelers, which my first 2 years watching.
No,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Terry, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Watching Flash throw bullets at people's feet, just...
Dan, thanks for the phone call. Obviously, thanks for the song. It was very well done, very well thought out. We appreciate it.
Have a great one, guys. I really enjoy your podcast. I'll let somebody else
talk.
Hey,
thanks a lot. Sure. All right, awesome. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. We have another caller here, and phone lines are open if people want to call in. 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581 is the number to get on the air. And we're getting this caller here. Man, my computer's working slow today. Bryce from Brooklyn. What's up, Bryce?
Yo, what's going on, fellas, man? What a nice win today, man. Great win for
yes.
us.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of – I mean, essentially, I want to talk about just the coaching decisions. I want to give a shout-out first and foremost offensively to Todd Haley. Of course, Mike Tomlin overseeing everything, but Todd Haley, I thought they stayed patient – except for the deep throw, which I thought was a terrible decision at the end for the interception. But yeah. I thought they stayed patient. I thought they worked the middle of the field. I thought Todd had nice balance. He had good rhythm in the calls for the most part. Kept them on their heels. Helped out his offensive line, who I felt had a really good game, minus a couple couple sacks there. But I thought they kept the Bengals off their on their heels. Really got the ball into the hands of their playmakers. Some nice play designs, and just a very efficient game. When you may not get the sevens when you're down there, but what people forget is when you are possessing the ball and when you are that successful on third down, those threes start to kind of wear on another team if they're not moving the football. So we were able to at least possess the ball and put enough pressure on them when Dalton went out that we were able to take control of the game. So I want to just get your thoughts offensively before I go to the defense.
Well, honestly, did you really publicly on a forum like this give credit to Todd Haley? Like, was that a fan that actually said that? Like, I mean, you're being serious. This isn't a joke.
This is the, you know what, Jeff? This is not a joke. And let me tell you something. I actually think, and I'm going to go out on another limb, I think Todd is a good offensive mind. I just feel he gets a little in the ego stuff a little bit. And today, I didn't see a lot of ego play calling. It's like he was patient. He didn't get greedy. Took what the defense gave him. And when you do that with the number of weapons we have, you guys were talking about the drafts and all that, we've got the guys that if you're going to play that too high and just stay in it, we got the guys that's going to hurt you. We're going to matriculate, possess the ball, which we did, make third downs because we got the elite quarterback, and we're going to control the pace of the game. We were able to do that.
Yeah, I obviously you're serious, but it's just very rare to have someone call on the show and actually give props to Todd Haley. But you know what? He did exactly what I would have done. When you look at what the Bengals try to take away against Pittsburgh, and when you have a divisional rivalry, you know that there really are no secrets. You might have a trick play here or there, but they kind of know the scheme, what you like to do on certain down and distance. And I think that he did a great job of just saying, take what they're going to give us. And that equated to 10 catches for Heath Miller. That equated, you know, some big plays to Marcus Wheaton. And Antonio Brown had his catches and yards, but it wasn't a huge day that we're used to seeing it as of late. But it wasn't until Roethlisberger got a little greedy with the deep ball that I thought that they diverted away from that. I mean, D'Angelo Williams running the ball, I thought that the offense played great. And I agree with you. If you kick field goals, and before I go any further, how nice is it to have a kicker that you really can sit back and say, 47-yarder, he's got this. I mean, the kid is tremendous, and he's doing a great job. I know he's missed two, and he missed the PAT, but honestly, he's tremendous from start to finish. I'm very happy that the Steelers finally found this kid. It just sucks that they had to go through so many, especially Scobie, to get to him. But you kick enough field goals, and you're still putting pressure on them. And I thought that was what was so big about the opening touchdown, followed by the points off of the turnover. And now all of a sudden, you took the points off the turnover. They kicked a field goal to make it 10-0. That's almost a 10-point swing in my mind, because the Bengals on the doorstep, getting ready to punch it in for a touchdown, and you turn it the tide, and it seemed like the Steelers never looked back. But, Chris, what are your thoughts on the offense and the philosophy and the game plan that they had today?
I mean, it really seems that Todd Haley has helped Ben Roethlisberger get to a new level of offense, because he makes him realize, look, you don't need to take the home run shots. And I think that's in Ben. Like, he's like that guy that, you know, he's like the guy, like, I'm just, when he plays poker, he makes the ridiculous bet just because he has that kind of an ego. But I think that's part of what that talk to Bryant was. I think he was confident. He's like, we can finish these guys right now. I trust my guy. I'm going to try and put the best ball I can up there, and he's just going to go get it. And sometimes that works against you, like it did today. But ultimately, I think Todd Haley has helped him realize, look, if you complete several short passes, you can wear down defenses. And I think that's always been his scheme. And that was part of his scheme when he was with the Chiefs. And that was part of his scheme when he was working with Kurt Warner. And, you know, they just had Larry Fitzgerald, who could break like a 5-yard gain into an 80-yard touchdown in 5 seconds. But, you know, that's what a part of what's made Antonio Brown's career. He can catch the ball in front of defenders and get past them. I'm all for Todd Haley's offense. I'm glad, Bryce, that, you know, you're not Snoop Dogg undercover here trying to blame Todd Haley for everything under the sun.
Those videos are hilarious, though.
They're ridiculous. That guy, I mean, Snoop, he's a legend in his own right. But I'm like, dude, like, why are you mad at Todd Haley right now? The offense has scored 30 points for like 5 straight weeks. this is ridiculous. But yeah, I like Todd Haley. I like the system that we run. I think it's a lot better than what Bruce Arians had. And I think ultimately that's helped Ben work through the bad games and rely on his players and rely on the system and recognize the system and recognize what your opponents are doing. And ultimately, that's what's helped the Steelers get to where they are today.
Funny you would say that, relying on the players, relying on the system, because if we switch it over defensively, you know, we talked a lot about Ben coming back from injury, but what we didn't talk a lot about was last time we played these guys, no Shazier, no Tuitt, and no Will Allen. And even though Will Allen, you gave up some plays in the seams, I like to see us do better, those guys had a nice impact on the game today. They were active. The defense was flying around. And let's give credit to Tomlin and to Butler that they finally – they probably should have done a long time ago. But when Blake clearly screws up, bites on the – he's in the cover three, bites and gets beat – Mike Tomlin had seen enough, and I saw him go over to Carnell, and I think that's when you saw Cockrell come in, and he stayed in for most of the game. So credit them for having the courage just to go ahead and do that. I think our three best corners clearly are Cockrell, Gay, and Blake, and I think once the offense started to get that lead, you saw the defense just kind of unleash, and you know, the secondary is – you know, it's okay, you know, but our strength is can we unleash the front seven? And I thought we were able to do that, so I will give credit to Keith and to Mike for saying, Blake, love you, love your effort, you're a feisty player, but you got to come to the bench.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if you look at the defensive side of the football, especially the secondary, this team thrives and dies by the front seven, like you mentioned. They can get pressure on the quarterback, they can beat anybody. If they don't get to the quarterback, shoot, the backup quarterback can move the ball. And, I mean, you saw that with McCarron. I mean, some of these holes in the cover, too, that they were picking apart just made it way, way too easy. And you know, Chris and I were talking during the game. We're like, why are they not even contesting some of these routes, and meaning on the line of scrimmage, playing some damn coverage? I don't know why they try to revert away from that. But still, nonetheless, it's a good enough for a winning effort. And in today's National Football League, you don't need to have the 2008 Pittsburgh Steelers defense to win.
Right.
Back to playing. Period. I mean, the idea of winning with defense is still valid. The fact that you need that defense to win is not. And that's if you have an offense that can score 30-plus points a game, which Pittsburgh has done now, I think, the last five games. Chris, what do you think about the defense?
I think the defense, like I said earlier, I'm excited with the way they're doing. And, yeah, in this NFL, it is so much more difficult to play the style of defense like the Steelers did in the early 2000s, let alone the 70s. That's a whole other era of football. But in the early 2000s, I mean, you saw streaks of they didn't allow guys to get, like, 50, 60 yards on the ground. Like, that's how dominant they were. You know, you could not run the ball, and then we were going to blitz you, and it was so hard to capitalize on that unless you played in a, you know, in a style of offense where you were spreading it out and trying to dink and dunk a lot. And in this era of football, it is so hard to play consistently shut down defense. And like you've seen the Seahawks, they were supposed to be one of the best defenses in the league, and they have been in the past years. But when they go up against those big teams, you know, like the Patriots in the Super Bowl, or even us, though they beat us, they still gave up 30 points. You know, they're not elite in the sense that they – prevent all shutdowns. You know, they don't win 7-6. They win, you know, because they get turnovers. And I think, honestly, nowadays, the defenses that can take you to the Super Bowl are the defenses that create the turnovers and the big situations. And that's what happened today. If you look back at 2008, and it's funny enough, these two teams that I'm about to name, they've historically in the past 10 years, they've had some of the worst defenses in the league. But in 2009 and in 2010, Saints led the league in turnovers because their defense was just making insane plays on the ball and all the time seemed to be bailing out their offense, even though their offense was legit that year. But their defense, though it was not good at, you know, keeping points off the board, their turnovers they created helped keep them in games and ultimately even put away the Colts in the Super Bowl. And the same thing goes for the Packers the following year. They led the league in turnovers, I believe, that year. They were all over the place making plays for Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, despite Aaron Rodgers having a really good game in the Super Bowl, it was a pick six that helped them establish a bigger early lead. And ultimately, the Steelers lost by 6 points. So I think in today's NFL, it's just as important to have the turnover machine of a defense. And right now, the Steelers, they're working on that. They, you know, three turnovers today. That's what you like. That's what you like to see. You want to see more stuff like that. So yeah, I'm happy with where they're going. You know, you still want to see improvement. You still want to see a better secondary. But the Steelers have an elite offense right now, and they don't have to worry about too much on the offense as far as, you know, personnel for the next like 2-3 years before they have to start switching people out.
Yeah, I'm right there, man. And just my last point, didn't want to get your thoughts on my last one. Real quick, I agree with you 100% of everything you just said. So then my only critique of Colbert and Tomlin then, because of the way defenses have changed, they really got to refocus how they view DBs. Golson may be this guy, but they got to find now that block boss corner that when you come on this block, you only doing what I say you're doing. They got to find that type of guy who can hold it down at least for one half of the field, and they can fill in the other corners because that guy needs to be able to get us turnovers. But I want to talk about real quick the decisions coaching of the Bengals. Listen, Ben Roethlisberger is Ben Roethlisberger. You want to stay in that cover two? I'm all for it. But at some point, you got to take some chances, particularly when the Bengals are playing defense like it's the Bengals of, say, 2012, where that front seven was just outstanding and our offensive line was not what it is today. I mean, aside from a couple sacks, they just thought that that front seven was going to be able to handle it. And for the most part, I thought our offensive line kind of dictated to them. So that really puts you in the bind when you run that too high. If you're not creating havoc over there on defense, you know, Ben Roethlisberger was just able to sit back there and be Ben. And D'Angelo Williams, because of that, I mean, that's a bad boy. He can run the football. He does it all. And he really hurt them. I thought the Bengals were almost too stubborn. They weren't exotic enough, and they didn't mix it up to at least try to confuse Ben or to try to kind of create some type of havoc. And they paid for it. And lastly, their backup quarterback, I know he's a backup, but when he started getting that pressure, you could see he's a little skittish, and that always bodes well for a defense when a quarterback gets skittish. So what are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that it's the Cincinnati Bengals, man. I mean, how long have the Bengals bungled, you know, everything? I mean,
right.
Why would Marvin Lewis go for a field goal there when you need to, when you're two score down?
Right.
Why would you take a field goal there? You go for the touchdown. I mean, he always overthinks things. There's a reason why he's not successful in the postseason. This team is – they have good coaches, but it just seems like they are never able to put it all together. I'm honestly not surprised. I think sometimes the Bengals, when they're good, like you think back in 2005, like they were legitimate. I mean, they were legit. And I think sometimes they get a little hubris. They get a little bit prideful when they think that they can just go in and they're going to set the tone and they're going to dictate and they're going to do whatever they want to do. And it doesn't matter what the other team is capable of doing. And you saw – I think they thought, you know, we'll drop people back in coverage and we're just going to send our primary front four and we're going to get pressure. Well, he didn't. Kudos to the Steelers' offensive line. Roethlisberger had all the time in the world, and Keith Miller, Marcus Wheaton, they picked him apart. And so I'm not shocked because it's the Cincinnati Bengals, and anyone who's spent a lot for any amount of time knows that the Bengals literally just bungle away every opportunity. Chris, what do you think?
I'm not shocked at all. The Bengals are the Bungles. And to be honest, and I'm talking about this in my winners and losers, which is almost done now. They poked the bear. They woke the sleeping giant.
Yes.
What were you thinking? Trash talking the Pittsburgh Steelers. As much as I do not like Coward, I think it's Colin Coward from ESPN. He had a hilarious segment like 5 years ago.
He did. That was funny.
Yeah, that was. He's like, don't trash talk the Pittsburgh Steelers. You can trash talk the Patriots. They're the rabbit. They're out skiing you. They're out, you know. But he's like, you know, if the Packers,
they're poets. They're academics.
Exactly. You know exactly what I'm talking about. He said the Packers, they're like Coldplay. You know, really good. They come up with good stuff now and then. Everybody likes them. The Patriots, you know, they're like poets and stuff. But the Steelers, they're like guar. They eat people. Their fans rob convenience stores. And that's like what the Steelers are doing today. Every time Vontaze Burfict got in someone's face, someone got in his, and he kept backing off. And like, I think we put something on our Vine earlier, early in the game. He went to talk to Vince Williams, Burfict, that is. And as soon as James Harrison stepped in front of him, he started backing up and was like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm still here. But, you know, it seemed at every turn, and, like, even when he made a tackle on D'Angelo Williams and he, like, tried to get in his face, DeCastro came and peeled him off so quick with a hit. It was just like, man, I love the tenacity of this team. You don't trash talk the Pittsburgh Steelers. And that's what the Bengals did. They did, and then the Steelers came in, took their lunches, and now they're sitting there like, man, maybe we shouldn't have done that because they were kind of mad. We preferred when they were just like, you know, happy-go-lucky guys.
Exactly. Very well said.
Don't poke the bear. Don't poke the bear.
Yes, do yeah. not, all right, do not
Michael,
poke the bear.
No, we appreciate the phone call as always. Hope you keep calling and keep listening. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you guys are great, man. Talk to you later.
Same with you, guys. Right. Thanks.
I'll tell you what, there's a – I mean, when you look at this team and this win, I keep on asking this question. It's a question I'm going to tease out there before we take our next caller. This Steelers offense scored, let's be honest, had 33 points. Six of those, we'll say, came, or seven of those, we'll say, came from the defense. So 26 points against a really good defense. And I didn't think they played that great. I thought the offensive line did a great job. But when it came to really capitalizing on opportunities, I don't think they played that great. Here's the question I'm teasing out there. What is the ceiling for this offense? Like, if they played a game that was just, man, they were clicking, like, what is the ceiling for this team? And I'm going to tease that as we bring in our next caller here. We have 814-592. You're on with Jeff and Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, this is Jake from Hawaii. How you doing?
All right, Jake. What's up, Jake? How's it going?
Hey, good to talk to you guys again. I got an offense and defensive question, but it's great to start with the offense. You talked about it clicking. I think Marcus Wheaton has been a big part of that this past couple weeks. You know, it, coming up with a contract situation, do you think he is vital to keep on, or do you think he can be replaced with, like, a Sammy Coates or a free agent?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Could you repeat that question, please?
Oh, yeah. Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay, sorry. I was saying that you talked about the offense, you know, clicking and how important it is. Do you think it's vital for the Steelers moving forward to keep Marcus Wheaton, who's been a big past couple weeks, a big part of that, or do you think that they can replace him with a Sammy Coates, or he's vital to the offense, being that his contract's going to be up soon?
Well, you know, I think that the Steelers are going to keep him no matter what for next year. I think if anything's going to change in the wide receiving core, it's going to be Darius Hayward Bay. His contract's up at the end of this year. And I think that he's done what they wanted him to do, to come in, to be a veteran presence, to help these younger wide receivers, to be the example, and all that good stuff. And he's done that. And he's been a very good citizen for the Steelers, so to speak. And I think now you look at next year's wide receiving core will probably be Martavis Bryant, Antonio Brown, Sammy Coates, and Marcus Wheaton. Now the question then comes out of Marcus Wheaton then will be in his final year of his rookie deal. So I can't see Marcus Wheaton even thinking about an extension based on the fact that if he keeps performing at his level, he's going to turn into, in my opinion, like an Emmanuel Sanders type. Maybe Nate Washington is a better comparison in terms of the skill level, and they're going to be able to make more money in free agency. So I think that the Steelers kind of milk him for all his work next year. You hope that Sammy Coates is able to kind of show up and be that next wide receiver that's going to fill in. And they've got some guys in the practice squad that are capable wide receivers as well. So in my personal opinion, I don't see Marcus Wheaton being with Pittsburgh after his rookie deal is up. However, I do think that he stays with Pittsburgh next year. I don't see him trading him or anything like that. And I think that the Steelers ultimately are going to have another great wide receiving core in 2016. Chris, what are your thoughts?
I do think that I actually wrote about this summer, in fact, and got a lot of flack, surprisingly, from people saying, oh, you're ridiculous. But the thing is with Marcus Wheaton, he has a lot of talent, and he's behind the best receiver in football and a guy that they're trying to make, you know, one of the best deep threats in football in Martavis Bryant. He already is one of the best deep threats, but they're trying to develop him even more. And, you know, it's tough for Marcus Wheaton to really shine in this offense. But at the same time, you know, he's become a really good utility guy that, you know, if you could find a consistent guy like what Jericho Cotchery was for Ben Roethlisberger a few years ago, you could fill him in. And I said years ago, with the way that the Steelers have to sign people, you know, Le'Veon Bell's contract is coming up soon. Kelvin Beach's contract is up after this year. You know, we got people we need. I think Dave DeCastro needs to be re-signed. I might be wrong about that. They might have signed him recently. But you got players that you got to pay, and key players in this offense. You can't let Le'Veon Bell go. And, you know, Martavis Bryant, for all the things that he's doing, you know, he's a guy that, you know, like, you know, I'm not sure if I want to let him go. The only way that I can see them keeping Wheaton is if he doesn't command, because they haven't been throwing to him a whole lot, if he doesn't command a lot of money, and if he's like, hey, sign me for $2.5 million or $3 million a year, and, you know, we keep him around for like 2 years extra. But I don't see us being able to keep him, because in today's NFL, there's so many teams are always looking for new weapons, and I think that Wheaton is a solid speedster that with good hands that can be consistent for offense. And, you know, give him to a Cam Newton, give him to an Aaron Rodgers, and I think that he's going to, if he gets to be the like the number one starter or the number two guy in an offense, he'll put up 800 yards, 6 touchdowns, or 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns in a given season.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, you know, as much as it's nice to have Wheaton, it's a it's a luxury at this point. I think he can go get something better with a lesser team. I don't think he's about to take a team discount with the Steelers just to stay.
Right.
Thanks, guys. I had one more question on the defense. Our front seven seems pretty shored up. I mean, who do you think would be the person that you think you need to extend in order to keep the front seven tough right away as opposed to letting go?
Well, I think that if you're going to look at the front seven and you're looking at the salary situation for all those players, linebackers included, the next person that you're going to have to look at is Steve McClendon. He becomes a free agent after this year. And then you're also looking at Lawrence Timmons, who has, I believe, one more year left after this year on his deal, which he's going to have a huge salary cap number next year. They're probably going to look to renegotiate his deal. People are wondering, do you extend that deal, or do you think that Vince Williams is going to be a guy that's going to be able to fill in and be the next guy up and all that stuff? I think McClendon's the guy right now. You have to ask yourself, is Dan McCullers the guy that's going to fill in? Is he going to be able to be that player at nose tackle? And I don't know if he's ready for that. He's a great run support, has yet to show a lot of promise in the pass rush, which is where McClendon thrives. McClendon also has the versatility to be able to move out the end, which he did earlier this season when Stephon Tuitt was out. But Cam Hayward just got a new extension. He's locked up for long term. Stephon Tuitt is only a second-year player, so you don't need to worry about his contract. Jarvis Jones will be entering his final year pretty soon. Arthur Moat signed a deal. And Ryan Shazier is only a second-year player. So our front seven, in terms of the Steelers, is very much young, and I would say McClendon is that guy. Chris, would you agree or disagree?
I agree. I think that McClendon is a guy that, you know, he's been very good for the defense. I'd like to keep him around. But, you know, McCullers is playing better. And I think that we could find another young guy or a guy around the league that could do what McClendon's been doing, over time. Timmons is a guy that people have talked about getting rid of. I think that the biggest question right now, and I don't want Timmons to go, just to clarify, I'm not saying that we should get rid of him, but people have talked about it because of the cap number he commands and will have to command after we get a new contract. But I think the real biggest question is, what's going to happen with Vince Williams and Sean Spence? I really, 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 really like Vince Williams. He embodies, Jeff, you wrote a great article about him earlier this week. He embodies what it means to be a Steeler. He don't come asking for nothing. He comes and he gets the job done. And he hits hard. He does his stuff. I really like the way that he plays. He always seems to be in the right place at the right time. Sean Spence, though, at the same time, he doesn't seem to be out of position either. I don't think he has the hit power that Vince Williams does, but he seems to be a guy that knows the system and can make a play for you. And these are two veteran linebackers now that have been in the NFL three, four years, and that their contracts are coming up, and you want to keep them because they're perfect for depth at middle linebacker. That's something that we don't have to worry about, but soon we're going to have to start worrying about it unless we let go of Lawrence Timmons, and we hope that Ryan Shazier can just be what Timmons has been for us for the past, 8 years? I think he's been in the league. I think that's the biggest question for the front seven. What happens at middle linebacker? And McClendon is a question mark, but I think that they have a good solid fill gap for that. I think McCullers will step up in that position, but I'm really concerned. And also because McClendon can shift the defensive end. But I'm really concerned about what happens with the middle linebacker situation with Timmons' contract coming up and Spence and Williams.
Do you think there's a concern, though, with the amount of playing time McCullers has gotten this year as opposed to it seemed like he was getting more playing time last year?
I don't think there's a huge concern. I don't think it's a huge concern. I think that I've been seeing him on the field, more as far as he's starting to get more reps. He hasn't gotten as many snaps as you'd like, and I think there are times where he's decreased. But part of that is because McClendon's been so good. But as far as McClendon, I think that the team is confident enough to put him in the game, and especially when you have two killer defensive ends on your right and your left side. It mitigates you not being like a superstar defensive tackle. But what were you going to say, Jeff?
No, I was just going to say that I think that McCullers, sometimes coaches hound guys just because they're a certain way, and then sometimes it's because the players just don't get it and they don't get it done themselves. And And Coach Mitchell, who coaches the defensive line, you read reports, talk to people that are at training camp, that are behind the ropes. He hounds McCullers night and day. And it's because he has so much potential, and yet for some reason or another, he just never lives up to it. I don't know if he's lazy. I don't know if he's not intelligent. I can't say that because I don't know. So I'm not going to speculate. But for some reason, they think that there's something keeping this kid, and he is a kid, from really blossoming. And I think he's gotten better this year. He hasn't played as much, but the time that he has been on the field, I think he has gotten better. You know, his tab level's been lower. He's gotten more drive. If you think his rookie year, there were a couple of times where he literally drives the interior of the pocket back and pushed them right past the ball carrier. He wasn't even keeping an eye on the ball. I think McCullers is part of the plan moving forward. I think the question is just what do you do with McClendon?
And I don't doubt you on that one. You're absolutely correct. I think McClendon's a great player, and McCullers is as well. Just one final thing to touch on. Do you think the organization, since they've put so much time and money into Spence, even seeing him through his injuries, do you think they feel like they owe him an extension, or they owe to themselves to continue to have him on the team over anybody else?
I think, personally, if anything, they're going to look at him and say, hey, we want you back, but we've been here for you through thick and thin. How about you cut a full hometown discount? I think if anything's going to happen, that's what the Pittsburgh, if I'm the Steelers, that's my approach. And I'm saying, look, when everyone else would have cut you loose and said good luck with your jacked up knee, your nerve damage, when people thought that you weren't even going to be able to play football again, we kept you around. Then you hurt your finger and you were on the shelf again. We kept behind you. Now's the time for you to get behind us and give us a little bit of a discount. That's my personal. Chris, what do you think about that situation?
I honestly think the Steelers owe nothing to Sean Spence. And Sean Spence don't owe anything to the Steelers. I think he does owe them this. After the big injury, they did stick with him, and they kept him in the game. So that I think that should help. That might edge him and say, like, hey, you know what? I'm going to stick with these guys. If they kept me in the league, he might never have played football again with the nasty injury that he took in his rookie season. So I take that back. I think he does owe them a little bit. But as far as the Steelers, it's like, hey, man, we gave you an opportunity to come in the league, and now there's film on you that shows that you can be a solid middle linebacker for teams. So I think as far as re-signing, and you know, if they can get him for a non-heavy contract, somewhere like around $1 million, $1.5 million, I think that for like 3 years, I think that would be nice, and I think that would work out for both parties as far as Sean Spence, he would develop more, and then as Lawrence Timmons starts to get older and Ryan Shazier is working in, and if Ryan Shazier gets hurt, which you see every day, but that'll give him more shots in the lineup to prove himself. And, let him make a big pick six or have a big hit on somebody or force a fumble in a key game. And that's when teams will be like, hello, can we call up for some Sean Spence and maybe we get some trade value with that? Or maybe he signs a big contract sometime later. But that's the other thing to consider. You know, like with Antoine Randall, he was an elite receiver for the Steelers back in the mid-2000s. But, when he threw that touchdown pass in the Super Bowl and he made some catches in the playoffs, people recognize this guy has some talent, and the Redskins paid him number one receiver money, and he was not a number one receiver, but teams like the Redskins and the Browns and the Raiders and the Chargers, they'll pay you that kind of money, and that's ultimately like, hey, I got to go make my payday as an athlete, make like, $5-8 million a year for a little while, and then I'll do what I'll do afterwards. And I think that's where Spence is. That's kind of where Beecham is. I think that's where who were we talking about earlier? We were talking about another player that we shared. Oh, Marcus Wheaton. I think that's where he's at. I'm not an elite receiver, but if people see me as a guy that can be a dangerous dude and pay me number one money, I'm not going to say no to it. So I think if Sean Spence can get his money, get his money. But if he's not getting any big offers anywhere, stick with the Steelers. They'll give you a shot to be a star in the future.
Cool. Thank you, guys. I appreciate the podcast.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for calling in. All right, Chris, I know you have something on your mind. What do you want to talk about?
Well, it's a fun topic, Jeff, because it's been something we've been talking about for weeks, and it's because the Ravens lost today, and they have a losing record guaranteed for the season. They have 9 losses. They got utterly destroyed, dismantled, skin in half by the Seattle Seahawks. It was ugly. And the sad part of that game was that Thomas Rawls is now out for the season with a broken ankle. He was filling in greatly for Marshawn Lynch all this season, but they lost 35-6 at home to the Seahawks. And I know, they had Jimmy Clausen at quarterback. Joe Flacco's hurt. You know, they're rebuilding. But dang, they're bad, Jeff. They're getting spanked. Tomlin never had a losing season. And I know you and I have been talking about that, and Jeff's going to write on that, everyone. Be sure to look out for his article this week on that. But dang, they got spanked. And I was kind of laughing my butt off when I saw that game. Of course, after we won, you know, I wasn't really, you know, laughing until I was sure that we wouldn't. But when I looked at that score, I was like, yep. Serves you right. And, you know, what do you think about that, Jeff? John Harbaugh taking his first 9-loss season?
Well, hey, let me give the listeners a little bit of a background, because they're probably like, well, what are they talking about? Now, this is something that is probably about, 4 or 5 weeks ago. I was keeping pace on the AFC North, and I was writing AFC North wrap-ups and 2-1 or 2-loss. And I was like, man, you know what? I think the Ravens are bad. And they Steve Smith had just gotten injured. And I just looked back, and I was going to write an article which was basically titled the Failures of the Ravens Point to the Success of the Steelers. And there's the fact that when the Steelers were going through the same thing the Ravens are right now, and that is, they're rebuilding. And they've lost a lot of veterans that were big key parts of their team, and now they have to try to find the replacements. And the Steelers went through that when Hines Ward and Larry Foote and James Ferrier and all those guys who were a big part of those teams kind of left, whether it was on their own accord or not, the Steelers had to rebuild. And they did that through 2 8-8 seasons. And they were ugly, but they were 8-8 seasons. And I kept on saying, I think that's like the bar for me for the Steelers is 8-8. That's the worst as it gets. Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. His win today secures that again for the 2015 season. If they drop their last three, they finished 500. And I think I looked out like, you know what, I'm going to wait. I could write this article now. But with my luck, the Ravens would somehow gut out 9 wins, and now I look like a fool. So I waited. And now all of a sudden they've lost their 9th game, officially a losing record, and it could get worse because they're not good, and Jimmy Clausen is their quarterback, which says a lot. And it's really all you have to say, in my opinion. But I think that this story, and yeah, I know when I live in Maryland, no one enjoys watching the Ravens lose more than me. Trust me. But at the same time, this story is more about the Steelers than it is the Ravens. It's about the Pittsburgh Steelers and their draft and their offseason, their acquisitions and their coaching staff, especially Mike Tomlin, being able to get the job done and still being competitive. Because even those 8 years, they were at one point, I think it was in 2013, they were 42-yard line suck-up field goal away from getting into the postseason. And it didn't happen. But I'm just telling you, that's kind of like the people talk about the standard and the standard. That's the name of our Wednesday night show with Lance Williams. The Steelers embody that. And it's great to be a Steelers fan when you can look and say, you know what, we had our dog days. They were 8-8. Now, look at us now. 11-5 in 2014. This team could easily win 10 games this year. Maybe even match that 11-5 record again. I have no doubt that they could do that. That's kind of my spiel with that. There is going to be a story coming. Expect that probably around Wednesday is my plan for that article. Ooh. But still, that's my idea for that article, and it will be on the website soon. Really, I can't think of much else to cover, Chris. I think we kind of covered all our bases. I hope everyone is listening. Join us Wednesday night for the Standard is the Standard. It's our podcast with Lance Williams as we preview the upcoming game with the Denver Broncos. It's going to be a big one. That's going to be a big, big game. I hope everyone listens. And as always, we have a lot of stuff coming up for you on the BehindTheSteelCurtain.com website. I hope that you check it out early and often, because there's a lot of quality writers, a lot of quality information and good commentary on that website every single day. And I don't say that because I'm the editor. I say it because it's true. All right, as always, if you called in, thanks for the time. Chris, thanks for your time and manning the phones with me. And next week, on to the Denver Broncos, ladies and gentlemen. The Steelers win big. Enjoy it for the next week, and we'll see you next time on the Steelers Final Score. Bye.